welcome to Hazel and Katniss and Harry and Star, a young adult literature podcast, their film and television adaptations, and everything in between. I'm Joe.
And I'm Brenna.
And our show is located on the ancestral lands of the Haudenosaunee, the Huron-Wendat, and the Anishinaabe on lands connected to the Toronto Purchase, Treaty 13 of 1805.
And on the Tecumloops Te-Sequepem territory within the unceded traditional lands of Sequepem Ulu. And today's text, Kissing Booth 2, Going the Distance, takes place in San Diego, California, the traditional home of the Kumaye peoples. Interesting fact, though, Joe, like the first film, it was filmed in Cape Town, South Africa, which, of course, is the traditional home of the San peoples.
Okay. So, Brenna, we have left behind our New Zealand month of programming, and we are firmly back into former Wattpad territory.
Oh, and how formerly Wattpad was this book, Joe?
Okay, so here's the thing. If you go back and listen to that first episode that we did on the original Kissing Booth, Brenna and I were definitely not fans. And I think we're going to have something to say once again about the editing style that is not on display in this here book. Mm-hmm. But I will say, I found this book quite a bit more enjoyable. And I kind of found the movie to be just full-on fun. Like, it's not good. Neither of these texts are good, but like a very fast read and a kind of surprisingly enjoyable film.
So the movie is genuinely fun. I texted you, Joe. The reason why it's fun is because it doesn't use literally any of the plot points or motivations from the book.
That's not entirely true.
Just has the same characters. That's it. And even then, not entirely.
Not entirely.
The thing about the book for me that makes it so obviously Wattpad-y is the way it feels like I am on a stopover between Kissing Booth 1 and Kissing Booth 3. And
severe new moon effect, right? Like, this is a sequel that has nothing to do because we're just getting to the next book.
Yes, and it's so boring. Like, nothing happens. It's fine. Like, the characters are cute. It's very readable. And compared to the first one, definitely.
No abuse.
Yeah. Like, there's 8 years between The Kissing Booth and The Kissing Booth 2. And this is a human being who has grown
matured
up. Right?
Yeah.
So she is 17 when she writes The Kissing Booth. And I think many times in that episode, I confess, I could not bring myself to
you
listen to it again.
You came down on this underage writer.
It felt like what a 17-year-old thinks like an ideal romance is, which, you know, like, I'm 40 and I don't want to read that anymore. So, you know, fair's fair.
Jaded.
But there's definitely a lot less of that here. This feels much more like a YA that we're used to, written by a young adult, but adult writer. Mm-hmm. She's 7 years further down the road. Like, I think that all of that is important to why this book is more readable. But literally nothing happens. Like, oh my God.
Oh boy. Yeah. The lack of conflict is honestly almost astonishing. And, you know, I'm on the record. I said that this book was readable. I think it is a big step up from that first book. I was on its wavelength for about half of this. And then I just kept saying, oh man, we are in new moon through my window territory where it's just like, why is this book so long and why is nothing happening? Like, okay, well, you know what? Why don't we just go through the plot?
Yeah.
Because I feel like people who, like, I don't know, do I want people to read this? Maybe, but also maybe don't waste your time. I don't know.
Joe is totally right. It's better than the first one, but like, let's just all keep in mind what a low bar better than the first one is. So in Kissing Booth 2, we are back with our protagonist, Elle, short for Rochelle, sometimes called Shelley. So Elle and Noah are doing the long distance thing. They are, you know, trying to make their relationship work. Noah is at Harvard, of course, because don't forget, you might remember from the first book, he's not just super hot and a bad boy, he's secretly a genius. So he's off at Harvard. She's still in San Diego, which, Joe, can I just say, the book treats the distance between these two cities like it's nothing.
Oh, sure. It's a quick walk in between the two.
At one point, she's like, do you think he'll come home for the dance? I'm like, are you stupid?
Well, this is a bit of a pervasive question I have with Elle, where it's just, she does not live in our world so often. Like, she sometimes she's spunky and fun in the ways that make her enjoyable, but also she's just so removed from reality, and that just becomes more glaring as the book goes on.
Yes. So alongside this, she is continuing her best friendship with Lee. They've sort of patched things up from the end of the first book. They're still extremely close. But now the drama in their lives is that Lee has a girlfriend named Rachel who, like, doesn't super love coming in a distant second to Elle literally all the time.
All the time.
In their relationship together.
Might as well be a throuple.
Yeah. Well, a throuple where, like, they secretly hate one of the people because, like, there's so many moments where I'm just like, okay, no, even Elle has to know that it's not okay to, like, always go to Lee. Like, there's one point where, like, Lee and Rachel have literally just had sex. And Elle's like, I'm sad about Noah. And Lee's like, gotta go.
Yeah. He is a big old dumb teenager where you need to realize you need to put your girlfriend first. It does not matter how much you like your childhood best friend.
Yeah, seriously. And then we have, because this book series can't exist without a lukewarm triangle, we have Levi, who is a new boy in town. He's awfully sweet. He has a younger sister, which sort of parallels with the younger brother that Elle has. They babysit each other's siblings. They obviously get close. So there's a made-up drama, which is that Noah doesn't seem to be talking to Elle that much, and there's a girl at Harvard named Amanda, I think. They change it for the movie, so I think I'm right. Anyway, there's nothing going on there, Noah tells Elle, but Elle feels like there is. And then Elle overhears this conversation where Noah's like, I can't tell her. You don't know what it's like. And Elle's like, what? And Noah's like, huh? And then Elle's like, we're breaking up. And that's like,
That's it. That's the conflict.
And that took us till November. That's September to November to get to this point, basically, or October, I guess.
Yeah, but then that's the first half of the book, and the entire back half of the book is the lead up to November Thanksgiving, where it's just all Elle being like, well, I guess I had to do it. Oh, but he's coming home for Thanksgiving. Oh, but he's bringing her. They must be dating. And then we get to Thanksgiving dinner, and it's really super awkward. But by the end of it, we realize, oh, no, there really was nothing. And Noah was telling the truth. And Amanda really just is his friend. The reason he wasn't talking to Elle is because he was having difficulty with his classes.
Yeah.
And he just didn't want to come off like a dum-dum. So technically, he did tell her that he wasn't cheating on her, but also he told her once, and then when she caught him and broke up with him, he never tried to explain again.
No, he didn't.
And these two deserve each other because they cannot communicate.
And of course, when Elle is in this frustrated state, she leaves the Thanksgiving dinner and she goes to cry on Levi's shoulder, and they make out. And of course, who sees it happen but Noah? And then kaboom. But then, of course, they get back together and everybody graduates. But it's not clear what's happening next year. So stay tuned for the Kissing Booth 3.
Also, I did call it. There is a kissing booth in the film because they recognize, hey, this title makes no freaking sense if we don't have this here, but there is definitely no kissing booth in the book.
There's a kissing booth in the book.
Is there?
Yeah, it's at the dance. Because remember, there's a picture of her and Levi kissing, and it goes, or not kissing, but they're in the kissing booth, and it goes on social media, and Noah's like, that made me super jealous. And you're like, why? When she describes the picture, they're like awkwardly standing next to each other.
You know what? You are correct. You are correct. I apologize, kissing booth too.
Clearly an excellent piece of literature. Okay, here's my problem. No one's motivations make any sense in this book.
Yeah, there were so many times where I just got really, really frustrated, primarily with Elle, a little bit with Noah, to a significantly lesser degree, Lee and Levi and Rachel, where it was just kind of like, oh, somebody needs to tell Elle, hey, the world does not revolve around you. But particularly with Noah and Elle's relationship, there's just so many points where you think, if anyone just opened their mouths and said something, this whole book would cease to exist. And I get it, teenagers, right? Like, this is their first big love affair, so neither one of them are very good at doing it. But dear Lord, why is this 400 pages then?
Yeah, that's one of the problems. And also, like, Rekels is a better writer here than she was in the first one. Mm-hmm. But we still have this really big tell-don't-show problem right. throughout the book. Like, one of the issues that I have with it is you're supposed to really want her and Noah to end up together. But, like, for not really any reason, we get told that there's, like, fireworks when they're together. But she literally has to tell us, like, I am feeling a spark right now and the spark is amazing. And then when she kisses Levi, she's like, that was nice, but there was no spark.
No there's spark.
There's no way the chemistry does not get demonstrated or built up in any kind of way. Mm-hmm. And so when she and Noah break up, it's kind of like, eh.
Yeah, and then you'll meet someone new. Don't worry.
And then you're kind of like, well, maybe Levi. Like, he seems really nice. Like, but I guess you're supposed to be rooting against that. But there's no real reason to care about one of these romances over the other because, yeah, I don't know if it's because we spend too much time in Elle's head or because Rekels is just not very good at writing the chemistry into the book. But, like, there's nothing to fire you up about either of these relationships.
No. I think it's actually just a bit of a problem with who these characters are constructed overall. Like, and we'll get to the film in a moment, but there's just so much more personality to the character, particularly of Elle, when you get to see her embodied by Joey King. Mm-hmm. On the page, I'm just not really sure why people like Elle. She just kind of, not in a mean, disparaging way, just she's a bit flat. She seems like a girl who has friends. And this idea that she's in the middle of this epic love triangle with all these heightened emotions. And I just think, okay, well, don't worry. Like, you'll find somebody else when you go to college. Everything about this screams first love, not I'm destined to be with Noah forever.
Yeah. And you know, they go really long periods of time without communicating, too. Mm-hmm. So any sense that, like, she can't live without him is undercut by the frame of the narrative itself.
Right.
And I think, too, like, so the first book really suffered from the I'm a guy's gal and I don't hang out with girls kind of vibe.
Right.
That still exists here. Elle's closest friends are all boys and we're constantly reminded that Elle is super cool because she'd rather play video games with the boys and she has to, like, force herself to go shopping with Rachel and, like, make an effort and rah, rah, rah. I'm like, that's toned down a lot here, but it's still present. So it also kind of makes you like, well, like, what is endearing about it? Like, she's fine, I guess.
She's fine.
But, like, I wouldn't have hung out with her in high school. And I just.
Well, she wouldn't have wanted to hang out with you, Brenna.
No, fair point.
You don't play video games.
Fair point. I'm not enough of a not a girl girl.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I just. There's a lot missing in the characterization. The book is carried along. I don't really know by what. It's frothy and light and you don't have to commit too deeply to any of the characters and you can tick through it really quickly. But, like, she hasn't fixed the core problems, which are, like, why should I care about these characters or what they're going through together? Like, and that's kind of unfortunate because I do see huge improvements in her writing otherwise.
Yeah, it's also interesting because that first book really felt like it was, ooh, Elle needs to make a very hard choice between the brothers, right? You know, does she love Lee or does she love Noah?
Yeah.
And here it's like, oh no, we put that to bed. We love Lee, but only as a friend. And he's got Rachel now, so everything is totally fine.
Yeah.
And then we have to artificially introduce Levi, who, yes, is actually a good guy. He's a decent character in the same way that Elle is kind of a decent character. But when she says, well, there's no sparks, I think, yeah, there's kind of no sparks in any of this. Like, to the point where there just needed to be a much more dramatically forward conflict to drive this. To compensate for the fact that we're just back into milquetoast, sort of, I think you said, lukewarm love triangle territory.
Yeah, it's almost like everything that we came down hard on the kissing booth about, which was the, like, fairly emotionally abusive dynamic between Noah and Elle. That is what was driving the chemistry in that book. And, like, yeah, I don't want it back, but it's really ick that when you take that away, Rekels is like, I don't know.
I don't know. What do you want from me? Aren't you already invested? I need to pump out two more of these as per my publishing deal. I don't know. I mean, we've joked about Wattpad. We've criticized Wattpad a number of times. Do you feel like part of the issue is the same persistent problem we've had with other texts, where this feels like it was maybe never intended to be a book too? It was, this is just part of an ongoing serialized narrative. And at some point somebody came in and said, chop it here and here, and we're going to publish it as a book.
Yeah, that's exactly why I said it feels so Wattpad-y to me, because it just feels like so much filler. Like, there's nothing here. And yeah, unless you're in a serialized commitment to these characters and you sit down at your computer and you read the next installment every week or whatever, like, I don't know what this book offers to someone who's not already committed to this world, basically.
Yeah, if you're a Kissing Booth fan, I could see a certain level of excitement accompanying new chapters or a new volume or something like that. But if the Kissing Booth was not your jam, this book does not offer anything new or exciting enough to really sink your teeth into.
Can I tell you my favorite review from The Independent? I think this might have actually been the film review, but it speaks directly to the book.
Okay.
To The Kissing Booth 2's credit, it's not as aggressively problematic as its predecessor.
True. Yes. Okay, well, why don't we transition over to the film, because I feel like we have a lot more to talk about.
The Kissing Booth is open for business! Again!
Sorry, I didn't realize I was going to be this nervous.
I'm guessing you might have a few questions. Let me bring you up to speed. As soon as school ended, Noah and I spent the whole summer together. And then, exactly 27 days ago, my heart flew off to Harvard.
I miss you, jerk.
I miss you more.
And here I am, first day of senior year.
And here we go.
Oh my God, Ellen, how are you?
So many beautiful girls at Harvard.
Experienced girls.
Sorry about you and Noah.
We didn't break up, though.
With different zip codes. Breakups are basically automatic.
Automatic.
Sometimes I hate high school.
That new guy, Marco?
He is seriously luscious.
The OMGs literally described 100 different ways Marco is a snack.
Nice to meet you. But I'm a little hungry, so I'm gonna go get myself a snack.
Very funny.
Lee and I have dreamed of going to Berkeley.
Ever since we found out that's where our moms became besties.
You're gonna love it there.
Maybe you can come to school here with me.
This is definitely a problem.
Need a hand?
Hell no.
Meet Marco for the booth.
Why?
Everyone's obsessed with him. Get him, everyone else will just fall in line.
We were wondering if you'd be one of our kissers this year.
No.
Don't you believe in charity?
Standing here talking to you.
Hey!
I sent out applications to Tufts, Boston College,
and
Harvard.
Oh, brilliant!
What the hell?
Okay, so The Kissing Booth 2 comes out in 2020. This is a Netflix production. And when we inevitably cover the third film and book, Brenna, I can tell you that they shot both movies concurrently, in part because they were worried about being able to get the cast together again and also having them look too old. So,
well, also by 2020, like, these people were getting famous.
Yes, just that. It's like we were grabbing hot people and putting them in this film, and then they only got hotter, and suddenly it was like, how about everybody stays on for two extra weeks?
we could shoot a whole nother one of these movies in 2 weeks.
So mean. I was joking because, yes, it obviously takes longer than 2 weeks to shoot a movie. Okay, so once again, this is directed by Vince Marcello. It's from a screenplay by Marcello, as well as his writing partner, Jay Arnold. And it's basically the exact same cast. So we'll just highlight the two new main important characters. For no arbitrary reason, we change Levi to Marco so that we can hire Taylor Zachar Perez, who, Brenna, hopefully you recognized as one of the co-leads from Red, White, and Royal Blue.
Sure didn't, but thank you for letting me know.
How dare you, ma'am? This man is so hot. I find it distracting. I preferred him in Red, White, and Royal Blue, but he's a very hot addition to this film. And then we also have Chloe, who is the British character who Elle suspects Noah is having an affair with. And she's played by Maisie Richardson Sellers. So I didn't really get a good indication from Recalls, but I'm pretty sure that these are both inclusion flips for the purpose of the film.
Oh, that makes sense. Also, you know, it's not just that they've changed these two particular characters, but they're not name-only changes, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, they've changed right. almost every beat for each of these two characters as well, for the better. Let me just say, for the better. The film plot makes way more sense.
Yeah, there's actual conflict in it. Yeah. So even though we're following a similar trajectory where Levi, now Marco, is a new student who arrives and he befriends Elle, he sort of steps in when Lee takes a step back, as it were, to spend more time with Rachel, because, of course, Rachel is threatened by Lee's relationship with Elle. But it's nice that even something as small as we send Elle to Harvard instead of just mm-hmm. keeping her and Noah apart the whole time and just like Skyping or FaceTiming or whatever. So she actually goes to Harvard to do a bit of a Boston college interview circuit. And while she's there, she finds an earring under Noah's yes. bed.
So there's actual evidence of something actually happening.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we all know that it's something very innocuous and it's just, oh yeah, I passed out drunk and lost my earring. And for some reason, no one found it until you did because you were scoping out the room for evidence of an affair, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing that is changed around the Marco Levi character is that there's this overarching
oh my god
plot to oh give god. Us some stakes of this DDR competition mm-hmm. in order to win enough money for Elle to go to a private university, because something that never comes up in the book is the fact that, like, Elle has planned her whole life to go to University of California, Berkeley, where she would pay in-state tuition. Mm-hmm. And in the film, she suddenly wants to go to Harvard, maybe.
Oh,
and
so boy.
In the film, they actually have a conversation of like, oh yeah, we don't have the money for you to change your plans to that degree. Oh
my gosh, my absolute favorite line. It's not really treated as comedy, but there is a comedy beat if you want to look for it, is when she says that to her dad, you know, how much money do you have set aside for college? And he goes, well, are we talking... still talking Berkeley, California, right? And she's like, grr. And he goes, well, we've got to save up for your brother too.
Yeah.
It's like she just never yeah. even occurred to her that they might have to pay two college tuitions.
The brother, by the way, is barely in the movie compared to his presence in the book, but
that's fine.
No, it is totally fine. But like, I love that part because that creates this whole ridiculous story where they're going to win a DDR competition so that mm-hmm. she will have enough money to go to a private university. It's been a it's long so time ridiculous. Since I've seen Dance Dance Revolution as a plot point. Like, I have to say, mm-hmm. welcome.
Yeah, I thought I was watching a Step Up movie.
And Marco is obviously good at it, but in a different way to Elle. He teaches her how to freestyle and like go right. with the flow. Anyway, the whole thing is great because it actually gives them some chemistry because they're spending yes. time in physical proximity to each other and they're hot. And mm-hmm. also, there's now stakes, which mm-hmm. the book doesn't have no. ever. So,
no, never.
Yes. So, it's a huge plus. I mean, it's totally contrived, but it's very fun.
Yeah, it just works so much better. And as you said, you know, it gives us opportunities to have these two ridiculously hot actors spend more time in physical contact. Like, it's DDR, but we're actually incorporating dance moves into this. So, like, we're yeah. flipping, we're tangoing, whatever. And I think the other wise decision is that we don't wait until the Thanksgiving dinner to mm-hmm. have Elle and Noah have to come face to face. He secret surprises her by coming in for the competition, and then mm-hmm. he's in the stadium when they win the competition, she and Marco, and they kiss in front mm-hmm. of everybody, because by this point she's just feeling super low about the earring and what she thinks it means. But I love that both parties are wrong, but we didn't wait for Elle to have to get all the way to Thanksgiving dinner and see her nemesis in person to make the decision to kiss someone yes. else.
And then I love the ending of the film, Joe, because it sets us up for number three, because at the end of the film, Elle finds out that she's been waitlisted at the school Lee is going to. Mm-hmm. She's been waitlisted at the school Noah is going to. And well, Marco is not going to university at all. So he's like going to be hanging around. And then in the final shot, she's actually been accepted to both universities. So now it's like, does she go to Harvard? Does she go to Berkeley? Or secret option three, hang around with Marco, who is not going to be doing anything.
See, it's funny that you say that because she definitely tells everyone that she got waitlisted at all of her options. I think that that was just her buying time because she actually already knew that she was in at both. And she just didn't know who she was going to pick.
That's irritating.
Okay, let's talk about some of these performances because the only reason that this isn't just a completely bland YA movie is because Joey King is selling this performance. Like, I remember thinking she was pretty good in the first film, but I was so frustrated by the plot mechanics and to a lesser degree, the character. But here, you know, we've got this hella grating opening montage of her and Noah doing stuff over the summer, and it goes on for so long.
It's the longest montage I've ever seen as an opener. It's wild.
It's horrible voiceover. Like, just I get they're trying to start the film off with this burst of energy, and I found it really annoying. But the whole time I'm just like, she is selling this. Like, I am not enjoying what they're trying to do with this, but she is giving me everything I need to be like, no, come along with me. This is going to be enjoyable.
She's very charismatic. And I buy that people enjoy her company in a way that I never bought that people like were clamoring to spend time with Elle.
Yeah, she actually seems fun here.
She does seem super fun. And her friendships with her female friends are much closer in the film. Mm-hmm. Like, she's just, she's an all around more personable person and less deeply narcissistic. Like, she's still way too much of a third wheel on Lee and Rachel's relationship. Like, that doesn't change. But you forgive it more because the relationship with Noah is sort of crumbling in a way that you can actually see happening. And so when she feels lonely, you buy it in a way that you don't in the book.
Yeah, it should be noted, if you are an Elle and Noah fan or even just a Noah fan, this is a bit of a harder text because we are Edward culling him off screen. Like, Jacob Elordi is not in much of this movie.
No.
And I do think it works to help introduce Marco in a believable way. And this is much more believable in terms of the chemistry test as well, because Taylor Zachar Perez has very good chemistry with King. I mean, I do think that was one of our takeaways from the first film, is that King had almost too much chemistry with everybody. So it was like, oh, how are we supposed to feel about this? Because we could just as easily see her getting with Lee. And here in the second film, it feels like we could just as easily see her getting with Marco.
Yeah, the overarching like need to be with Noah is, to me, pretty much just as absent as it is in the book.
Yeah.
And I actually, like, I really like her with Marco. Like, I much prefer that. And they're, you know, there's something quite lovely about Marco's character, this sort of searching character who's not, he's not as sold on what the next steps of life are as everybody else is. And, like, there's something kind of fun and different about him. And their chemistry is so good that, yeah, when Noah comes back, I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess.
Yeah. It's a reminder that, you know, the film wants us to feel a certain way. And I don't think Elordi's bad in this, but he does seem a bit more subdued. He obviously doesn't get to play a lot of the big fun beats in the way that, you know, Marco does.
He mostly takes his shirt off on FaceTime. That's mostly what he does.
One of the other things that I like about this is how Lee comes out looking like a bit of a dum-dum as well, because in the book, it seems like Lee and Elle are just really bad at picking up on Rachel's signs that she would like a little bit more private time.
They're just really codependent. Like,
so codependent. Yeah. Whereas in the film, there's this moment where Rachel asks Lee, I need you to tell Elle to give us some space. And then he says he does, but he lied.
Yep.
He never said it to Elle. So Elle, I mean, she still should have picked up on this. Like, any reasonable human being would have known, oh, this is too much.
But Elle's not exclusively in the wrong here, which makes a big difference.
Yeah, because it's so much easier to be on Elle's side still, even though we can obviously see that Rachel's hurting. Like, things really come to a head at the Halloween party when we were going to do a thruple costume of s'mores, and then we changed the costumes for Elle and Lee, so poor Rachel shows up just as the burnt marshmallow. It's a pretty funny visual image.
It's a good bit. It's a really good bit. Oh, gosh. I don't know. I really liked a lot of the individual beats. I found the film very fun. Yeah. I think overall, like, it's got a very low rating. I think overall it's a bit wacky and a bit goofy.
27%. And I'm just like, you folks need to watch more YA, because if you think this is truly bad, like, to me, this was a solid 3.5. It's too long. It's two hours and 14 minutes.
Long, Joe.
But I can't help but say, I put this on and I just kind of sat back, laughed a bunch, and thought, yeah, I wish that the story was a bit better, but the book ain't given us much to work with, so I'm satisfied.
I agree with you, but I also think we are grading it on a bit of a curve. It is true. Such a substantial step up from Kissing Booth 1 and such a huge improvement over the book that I think if you haven't seen Kissing Booth 1 or read the book, you would probably be less generous towards this film than we are.
That is fair. That is fair.
Yeah.
One other thing that I had to highlight that I'm not feeling generous about is this wig. This is a terrible wig. So if people were paying attention, they would know that Joey King shaved her head so that she could be in that Munchausen by proxy one, the act.
Oh, right. Where she plays Gypsy Rose, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she had a bald head, and obviously they were like, well, we want you back. We want you to do this. So we will see the wig in part 3 as well.
Welcome back, wig. You're Joe's favorite character.
Oh, boy. In some shots, it looks fine. Like, sometimes her hair looks really great, and I think, oh, you know, this is styled nicely. And other times, I'm just like, what is happening with her forehead right
now? It's the dancing. It's not a dance-proof wig. The dancing is a bit rough. And the volleyball scene, the random volleyball scene.
Oh, boy. Yeah, yeah.
I love the transparent scenes in these movies that are like, you know what would be great if Marco took his shirt off? Let's backwards configure what we need for this. And then they're like, oh, beach volleyball tournament. Like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, so much of the scenes that are set in the school, I told you off mic that this was filmed in South Africa. You knew because you had done the land acknowledgement, but you had forgotten the first film was there.
I totally had, yeah.
And I only remembered because looking at this gorgeous campus, which does not look anything like a U.S. campus looks like, but also just the weirdness of what we do when we're in class. So, like, sure, we've got this fair where we do the kissing booth, and it's such an elaborate production for the film. Love it. But yeah, there's a whole sports day sequence where seemingly half the school, or only the people that are recognizable in the film, get to pick two team sides. And then, yeah, like, we're just full on obstacle course, like it's some kind of military prep school. What was going on?
I'm obsessed with the part that, like, it's just so classic. Anybody who watched Saved by the Bell is very used to this dynamic. But, like, where is the rest of the school when these things are happening?
I don't know.
It's, like, 9 people who get to do all this stuff.
Yeah, like, it's an entire building or, like, an entire school. And yet there's, like, these moments where, you know, Elle makes an ass of herself because she inadvertently hits the on mic button when she's talking about Marco, and she talks about all the dirty things that she would do to that beautiful body. And then we get to see this race of Lee, you know, running down hallways and trying to get her before she embarrasses herself too bad. But when we cut to the students, we see a single classroom of about 20 people reacting.
I also love that all of the teachers, during instructional hours, as near as I can figure, have been called to the principal's office to give him a birthday cake.
Yes. Yes. One person is teaching and everybody else is in there for the cake.
The part of YA and school that I've always loved is the part where you're like, have any of you been to school?
No, no. We're only in a classroom to do the coincidental class. And apart from that, it's homeroom only.
Amazing.
Yeah, this was just, it was dumb. You know, I was actually having like a bit of a mopey, where kind of day. And it was just a bit of a delight to watch something silly and frivolous with people who seem to genuinely be having a good time. Like, the movie, like the first film, ends with a series of outtakes and kind of dance-alongs and that sort of thing. And honestly, I was just like, I need every movie to end this way because it fills me with joy.
Every movie, Joe?
Every movie.
Be a you know weird what? Ending to Schindler's
Oscar
List. Oscar
bait movies. The Zone of Interest. Give me that song and dance. Oh my God, I'm going to hell. It's the producers. There we go.
Oh my God. Okay. Should we play YA Bingo?
Yes, let's.
Bingo!
Not a good bingo.
Okay, I have a good feeling about this, Joe.
I also hopefully have a good feeling.
So definitely house porn. We've had this conversation a million times, but I will never get quite past the thing where, like, Elle's sometimes supposed to be kind of working class, like when they need a reason for her to win the money. But that house is amazing. Her bedroom is amazing.
Are you talking about her house or are you talking about Lee and Noah's house, which seems to have some kind of wild outdoor infinity pool?
Well, no, but they've always been wealthier than her, right?
Yes.
But her house, like her bedroom is massive and there's that sunroom where she has the big budget talk with her dad in. And I'm just like, what? Where do you live? It's beautiful and I want it.
You know where they live? South Africa.
Correct. My mistake.
Everything's bigger in South Africa, apparently.
Obviously, as you've already pointed out, we have an inclusion flip.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very subtle dead body because, like the first book, whenever it's just convenient enough, we are reminded about dead mom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I wish mom was here, but I'm still happy I've got you, Dad.
Exactly. Only when it's convenient. In the book, it's a big bonding thing between Levi and Elle because Levi's dad has cancer. So.
Right. Yes.
We have a female writer of the book.
Yes.
We're clearly on borrowed time in the book because we know everything has to resolve by Thanksgiving one way or the other.
Oh my gosh. But then again, just like through my window, as soon as we get past Thanksgiving, suddenly it's Christmas and then graduation and the book is over. I just thought, wait, what?
I wonder, Joe, this is a question for the listeners, but like, I wonder if part of the reason, A, this trope is recurrent, and B, you and I never understand it, is because of the discrepancy in the big dealness of Thanksgiving in the US imagination versus the Canadian. Because every time I read one of these books, I'm like, you're coming home for Thanksgiving? Oh, yeah, I guess. You know, and then like, I'm always reminded.
Isn't that 3 weeks before Christmas? What are you doing?
What are you doing? It's so weird. Isn't it just a dinner? Go to a friend's house.
International audiences may not know, but Canadian Thanksgiving is in October and often early October.
Yes, because we're sensible and we recognize that you don't want two turkey dinners that close to each other.
Oh my gosh, just put me to sleep.
You've already pointed out the overuse of montage in this film. It's not just the opening sequence, though.
No.
There's several video game montages. Mm-hmm. In fact, honestly, Joe, if they had cut all the montages, I think this movie would come in sub 2 hours.
Right. It's entirely possible. It does feel like a strong 15 minutes.
And I'm going to do one more and then I'm going to let you take over. But one of the most egregious uses of queer secondary character in a book yet. We haven't even talked about them. But like, there's this whole plot line that's going on in the background where one of Elle's nameless million male friends is actually gay and has a crush on another boy. Mm-hmm. And Elle's the only one who knows because, of course, she's Elle. Who else would you tell your secrets to if not Elle? And they do replicate it in the film. It's less annoying in the film, but it's still underserved.
I'm not going to lie. The, you know, reveal at the kissing booth in the movie, it was cute and it kind of got me. And I thought, okay, this feels a little bit nicer. But oh boy, yeah. Is it just, if this wasn't here, it would not change anything at all.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And in the book, it's almost more egregious because it's totally used as like a, look how people confide in Elle. Isn't she special?
Yeah, she's everybody's favorite. Well, okay, so this is the question for you, because we've talked about Manic Pixie Dream Person as filtered through somebody else's eyes, but like, Elle is the most magical, beloved, you know, she's the girl for the guys, but also she can make everything happen. Like, there's a point where Levi says, you know, if you believe it, you can do anything. Like, you can have everything. And I just thought, yeah, I guess she is totally perfect, except for when she's a colossal F up.
So we talked about this in Kissing Booth 1, the sort of author self-insert character that that this protagonist feels like. And I think that's a carryover from that. You know, there's this fine line when you're talking about Manic Pixie Dream Girls between like the external view, which is what you're describing with like Levi and stuff, and the internal view, which is that like Manic Pixie Dream characters must believe on some level that the world revolves around them, right?
Yes, the narcissism is high.
And that is definitely the perspective we get here. This is like what it's like, not in the 500 Days of Summer, like I'm critiquing the notion of a manic pixie dream girl framing, but like I am committed to my own identity as a manic pixie dream girl, which I think is what is happening here.
Yeah. Like what happens when Elle has to grow up?
Well, we will never know.
This is true. I'm willing to bet Kissing Booth 3 is going to be like the first freshman 2 months year. Of freshman year.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I have hollow friendships and romances for points at anyone in either text.
Yes, exactly.
I have musicality because we are doing quite a few of these montages set to a musical tone, but even just the DDR sequences. We do have a road trip when we go to Harvard. Obviously a Netflix connection because this is an original film just for them. We've got a perfect date also kind of points at whatever because especially in the film where everything is just so lavish, we're spending tons of money on all of this.
The money that Noah has access to take her out in Boston is like simply wild.
Yeah, it feels like it was paid, like the movie was paid in part by Boston tourism. Please come and visit the city.
It's true.
We do have a holiday, of course, and Thanksgiving. And then we can debate whether this is worth it, but Molly Ringwald is still in this movie ever so briefly as Lee and Noah's mother. And I mean, she's a stunt cast for me because when she turned up, I'd completely forgotten she was in the first film. Oh, Molly Ringwald, I love you. Oh, she's gone. Never mind. It, yeah. It's almost a stunt cameo.
She's a stunt cast for me. Something about when I see that red hair coming into a scene, I'm like, this is going to be good. I'm going to enjoy whatever happens next.
Right.
Hi, Mom.
Ah, great. Yeah. And of course, she's there to dispense some sage advice. Ooh, I did want to say there's a great moment where everything goes, you know, tits up at the Thanksgiving dinner and Elle gets advice, you know, go and make it up to the person that matters the most. It felt fake because I didn't buy it for a moment.
But I loved it.
But I did appreciate that she went to Rachel and not Lee or Noah.
Yeah, I actually really, really liked that too. I fully had bought in. Like, I thought she was going to Marco. That's where I thought we were headed. I was like, oh, we're going to upend because they're the people with the chemistry.
They're the only people I actually want to see together.
But no, when she goes to Rachel, I was like, oh, okay, I like that. Yeah. Totally unearned. But
yeah,
still.
Oh, 100%. No. All this to say, we've got ourselves a line and a very healthy sampling.
Excellent. Well done, Kissing Booth 2. If you weren't bringing us tropes, you'd be here for nothing.
Truly. It would be a page of just random words.
All right, Joe. Well, from kissing to kissing, because we're going to talk about the 25th anniversary of Never Been Kissed next week. Now, I had never seen this, so I'm excited for the conversation.
Yes. And folks, I'll just acknowledge in advance, if you've never seen this before, if you haven't seen it in a while, there's at least one element that's going to make you say, ooh, that is not aged well, or maybe it was never appropriate.
Yeah, it's true. But here we are.
Here we are.
And then if you're watching with us, you want to maybe get started, we're going to look at season one of Percy Jackson and the Olympians. So it's a lot of watching. So if you're planning to keep up, then go check that one out.
Yeah, get to viewing.
Yeah. So, Joe, I think that people should probably write in and tell us if they stuck with Kissing Booth as far as Kissing Booth 2, because I'm very curious. I, you know, this isn't the kind of, like, theatrical release where we'll get to find out if there was a drop-off in viewership or not. Like, we'll never know. So, I'm super curious. Because it is, I do think it's substantially better than the first one.
Right.
But after watching the first one, if I wasn't doing this for the show, I would never have come back to this well, so...
Yeah, I'll confess I'm not super excited to read book three, except to figure out what happens when Rico's actually has to wrap this up. Like, you're going to have something hypothetically to drive this conflict, but then also resolve it with finality once and for all. But then also just getting to see everybody continue with the same energy, because hypothetically, the third film will be pitched at the same level as the second film.
I'm also deeply curious because she's also written a book for adults this year. And I'm like,
oh no.
Really? Interesting. Like, no Wattpadery, just like a normal, like
a normal author
book through a production house. So yeah.
Okay.
Who knows? Who knows? So if you do want to get in touch with us about Kissing Booth or anything else you've heard on the show, you can find us on most social media at HKHSpod or on the hashtag HKHSpod. Joe, where do they find you?
I can be reached at B Stole My Remote, and that's the letter B.
And I'm at Brenna C. Gray, that's Gray with an A. And for anything long form or to get into our mailbag, you'll want to email us at hkhspod@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, can we wait a bit before we do Kissing Booth 3?
Sure. How's a couple of weeks?
No, Joe!
Yes, we will wait. How about this? We'll wait a year, because that's how long you had to wait until you got Kissing Booth 3.
Okay, that works for me. Okay. That does work for me. Okay. Until next time, I will see you on the page.
And I will see you on the screen.
And she and... Oh my God, I've already forgotten his name. Hang on.